Hey, Al Scott here, inviting you to check out Modern Times Magazine at moderntimesmagazine.com. It's a great little independent publication out of Phoenix, Arizona, featuring unique views on economics, politics, foreign policy, sports, and music, with great art scene coverage and fiction writing as well. That's Modern Times Magazine at moderntimesmagazine.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and our guest today is Joe Loria, reporter from the Wall Street Journal. He covers the UN beat for the Wall Street Journal. Welcome back to the show, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Thank you very much for having me on again.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here. So you wrote this article, and you were one of the authors of this article in the Wall Street Journal on the 26th. UN pushes back at U.S. calls to abort Syria inspection. And then the article was rewritten after John Kerry gave a statement. And some of the meat of your part of the article was pushed out for editing purposes, purely above board, honest and pure ones, I have to assume. So I was just wondering if you wanted to take the opportunity to remind people what's no longer available on the Wall Street Journal website, what was in this article, and what's important in the developments since then, for that matter.
Well, what happened was that right after this attack, the United States pressured Syria to allow the UN inspectors to go to this neighborhood east of central Damascus, Ghouta, where this chemical attack apparently took place. Kerry called the foreign minister of Syria to pressure him. And suddenly, on Sunday morning, either Samantha Power, the new UN ambassador, or Kerry, spoke with Ban Ki-moon. I know that Power made several calls to Ban Ki-moon, so it was probably her. But Kerry also spoke to him that weekend and suddenly said that the inspectors had to be pulled, that it wasn't safe for them, and that their mission was pointless. And this has now been put on the record by Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor, that the U.S. thinks the inspectors are pointless because their mandate, has to be remembered, is simply to determine whether a chemical attack took place, not who is responsible for it. So they're arguing, the U.S., that since they're certain that a chemical attack did take place, what is the point of these inspectors? So there's speculation that they were being asked to be withdrawn so the U.S. could attack. And there's precedent for this. Of course, it happened in Iraq. The weapons inspectors were pulled when the U.S. Told the U.N. that there would be an invasion imminent. But the inspectors did not leave, and Ban Ki-moon, to his credit, and it's unusual because he's not known for standing up to any of the permanent members of the UN Security Council, above all the United States, told them no, that the inspectors would go ahead with their work. And that was an extraordinary moment, and it has slowed down the rush to war to some extent, in addition to what's gone on in Britain, because there's been a revolt, even in the Conservative Party, certainly with the Labour Party, to have two debates on this. So, but at that time, that looked like the first moment when the UN was saying, hold on a minute, let's do the inspections, and the heck with the U.S. Telling us to pull them. So the inspectors did go out. They were shot at the next morning. We still don't know who actually fired at them. A bullet went through the windshield of one of their vehicles. And they've been collecting evidence. Now, even though I said they can't, by their mandate, determine who did this, they may inadvertently come up with information that could help understand better what happened that day and who may have been behind it, particularly the type of chemical that was used. We still don't know what it is. It's an assumption that it was sarin gas, which we know the government has. But it could have been chlorine as well. And in a moment, if you let me, I'll go through all the evidence that we have that Syrian rebels have had access and probably have used chlorine gas already in this attack. So if it is chlorine, for example, it might point to the fact that rebels, in fact, were the ones who carried out this attack and not the government. And we're waiting today, Thursday, for the U.S. to reveal its intelligence on this, their proof that would allow them to conduct a military strike. And given what happened with the Iraq war and all the skepticism about the false evidence about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, there's a pretty high bar for the United States to meet. And if you can believe New York Times reporting last night and today, this report today will not be very conclusive and won't have a smoking gun.
Right. Well, okay, so a lot of things there. First of all, Do you think it's fair to speculate that there was panic behind this move? It seems very clumsy that they would say, yes, we should send in weapons inspectors and chemical weapons experts. Wait, stop, pull them back, don't let them go, because, geez, there's no point in them being scientists on the scene anyway. I mean, what is that?
It's very suspicious.
When they grounded the Bolivian leader's plane over Ed Snowden. Like, what are you guys doing? What are you...
They say on the record that they were no longer needed and they're not safe there.
All right. Well,
but the U.S. certainly changed their mind. So whether they got definitive evidence that it was the government that did it and was supposed to hear that today, and then they decided that was it, they had to attack, and the inspectors had to be pulled out, or they're afraid that the inspectors will find out some information that will undermine the U.S. intelligence, and their argument that it was definitely the Syrian government that carried out this attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those are the two possibilities. They just don't want the inspectors to go and find out something that they don't want the world to know about, or they just simply feel they need to rush to this attack, which is curious, because why? I mean, Syria is not going anywhere, and this is the most supremely serious act any state can undertake, which is a military action, and it behooves them to take their time to carefully evaluate the evidence and make it public. It has to be made public. It has to be convincing. So why the rush? Now, they put out a story the next day that Aleppo could be next. There could be an attack in Aleppo, so they have to do it right away. I mean, that's just, you know, not credible in my view. So there's this rush to go to war, and I think that they're worried the inspectors might slow it down by their mere presence there, or that they might come up with something that undermines their argument.
Hmm. Well,
that it was the government that did it.
You know, it seems like part of the government, and maybe, I don't know, I'm just going on my impression of where it seems like some of these leaks are coming from when they're talk. Well, and I guess, no, part of this was just from the press conference where reporters were actually pushing back at the State Department press conference, and they had to admit that they really don't have much other than it seems like it must be the government. I mean, if there was a chemical weapons attack, then it must have been the government that chemical weapons attacked, and was more or less what the State Department spokesman said. And then in the Associated Press, there's this piece by Kimberly Dozier saying that... yeah, well, you know, questions remain about maybe it was a rogue group. This kind of, it sounds like this is at least part of the administration talking, but maybe lower down than that?
Look, I mean, as far as who did this attack, you have to look at two things, motive and capability.
Well, no, I'm asking as far as who in the government is putting out this narrative that maybe it was the government, but maybe it wasn't Assad. Who do you think is behind that?
I don't know. But why is that happening? They're not unified then in their understanding. But they are saying, they're covering themselves by saying, even if it was a lower level and Assad didn't know about it or give the order, it doesn't matter. That Syrian side did this, Syrian government side, and they have to be punished, and we have to prevent them from doing it again, which is fraught with all kinds of danger as well if they attack chemical weapons sites. But I don't know. You know, that kind of information is just, it's not clear. So, you know, what the inner thinking is within the government. But they're putting out, maybe they're covering the tracks with all kinds of possibilities of how this could have happened and how the government did it. So I think they clearly don't have a smoking gun. They cannot say they have evidence that Assad ordered this. They have these supposed tapes from the Israelis where his brother, the head of this elite unit, was the one who gave the order. I'd love to hear those tapes. I mean, I wouldn't be able to hear, understand what they're saying or who was saying it, but somebody would, and some outside experts should vet those tapes to see whether that indeed are the people speaking, that they say are speaking, and like Assad's brother. But, you know, I think they're just trying to throw a wide net out there and hope that whatever they're going to reveal today will be believed.
Yeah. Well, come on. It's not like the Israelis have a vested interest in this either way, Joe.
Well, precisely. I mean, you have to be very skeptical of whatever the Israelis put out.
Well, I thought it was interesting that
they are known to be, by way of deception, is that the slogan of the Mossad? So
Yeah. Well, and then on the other hand, they put it right there in the in Haaretz and the Israeli Times and whatever that, yep, we were the ones who got the intercept, and they don't apparently know that they shouldn't be saying that. Or that should be a secret if it's even true, you know. But anyway.
Well, they'll reveal it when it's convenient to them. I mean, it's not a secret they're listening in to the Syrians as the Americans are. I mean, that's no secret. So.
Sure, but I mean, to me, I don't know. They think that there's no reason to be embarrassed by that, whereas I would think that there's a reason to for it to be. If they want us to take it seriously, they should leave their name off of it, you know, us being the American public.
Mm. That just shows the confidence that Israeli leaders probably have in the support of the American government and the public, if they can say it. But certainly in the region, I mean, the Syrians know, as the Syrian ambassador yesterday said to reporters at the UN, that he had basically said American diplomacy in the region has been purely run by Israel over the last decades. And so nobody's fooled in the region about Israel's motives for revealing that information, if it's true, even if it's true.
All right, now, there's a couple of articles about experts doubting some of the things about the pictures and the videos that have come out here, where it seemed that the doctors and others helping transporting the bodies around and that kind of thing were not at all taking necessary precautions to protect them from sarin and ought to have been suffering terrible symptoms themselves. It's not like this stuff just dissipates in the wind in a minute after it's effective. So, and then you brought up that there were reasons to doubt that it was sarin and reasons to believe that instead it was chlorine, and even a history of the so-called rebel side using chlorine or at least having stocks of it or something like that. Can you please elaborate?
Yeah, of course. At first, there were reports that it could have been concentrated tear gas, or I'm speculating chlorine because of the rebels' history with the chlorine. But it did not seem, from what immediately was said by experts, that it was sarin gas, although maybe it was. I mean, that's what the UN inspectors are there to find out, what the Americans don't want them to find out, apparently. What was the gas that was used? And maybe you could even find its history and where it was manufactured. And that could be very revealing as well. But the background of those videos, something happened. A lot of people died, and there was no wounds. And some experts say there wasn't a lot of vomiting, and the color of the foam I read coming out of some people's mouths wasn't what you'd expect from a sarin gas attack. So all those things are still up in the air, exactly what it was that killed these people. But the background to whether the rebels were involved in this, I mean, you look at the motive, first of all. The Syrian government, Assad, has absolutely zero motive to have done this. First of all, they're winning on the battlefield. Number two, he invited, and they had just arrived, UN weapons inspectors, chemical weapons inspectors, to look at three previous alleged attacks in the country. And it was also the anniversary of Obama's red line speech. Why would Assad unleash a chemical attack unless he's completely mad, and he was just giving the finger to the U.S. and the U.N. But it doesn't make sense. But, of course, the motive on the other side is clear why the rebels would do this, to get airstrikes. And they were on the verge of maybe getting what they wanted because they're losing. They're desperate, and their backers in Saudi Arabia, maybe Qatar, need Western intervention to save their project of overthrowing Assad. So the motive is clear. The rebels have a motive and the government doesn't. That doesn't mean that the rebels did it. But the capability is interesting because Susan Rice, National Security Advisor, and other officials have said, and UK officials have said categorically that the rebels do not have the capability to launch this attack. That's clearly untrue. There's a video circulating on YouTube right now, and we don't know where it is. You don't know who these people are. They could even be Syrian government militias in plain clothes. But you see men loading gas canisters onto a howitzer and firing them. It doesn't take much to fire gas into an area of that nature very close by, because the fighting is going on in very close quarters. And as Pepe Escobar, you've had many times on your show, has written in RT, Russia Today, last night, the Israelis have said that they believed that they leaked to a Kuwaiti newspaper, apparently reported that the government had fired from a position nearby this neighborhood, Ghouta. But Pepe points out that a Finnish investigator has shown that that actual post that it was fired from has been under rebel control since June. So it can be done by the rebels. And do they have access to the chemicals? Well, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, a cell was broken up in 2007 after 12 attacks. The New York Times reported it back then inside Iraq. But we know that Al-Qaeda in Iraq has infiltrated and moved into Syria. And they've already been arrested for 12 chlorine gas attacks. At the end of May this year in Turkey, there were several members of Nusra Front detained by the police. At first, it was reported that it was sarin that they had, and now that was denied by the police. We don't know what they had. It could be chlorine. And 2 days later, another arrest in Iraq of five members of the cell manufacturing sarin and mustard gas. And then, of course, on March 19th, in Khan al-Asil, the reason why the inspectors, the UN inspectors were there, was to look at that and two other sites. There was an attack that killed 26 people, 26 Syrian government soldiers, I should say. And the Russians produced an 80-page report saying that this was crudely manufactured devices that were used in chemicals that could only have been done by rebels because the Syrian government has more sophisticated methods if they were going to deliver chemical gas. So we have several cases. We also have pictures from the Syrian government that were released that could be propaganda, but that could also be true, of captured chemical weapons in rebel hideouts that have markings of Saudi Arabia being the origin of these chemicals. So they have access to chemicals. They have capability to do it. Did they do it? We may never know. But to dismiss the fact, the possibility rather, that it was the rebels is just plainly wrong.
All right. Now, so what's the latest from the inspectors? I mean, they're a few hours ahead of us anyway.
They're leaving. Ban Ki-moon spoke today in Vienna, and it's curious because as he did stand up to the United States, but in this speech he was saying he wishes that the inspectors can stay a bit longer. I mean, it's up to him to decide whether they stay or not, but he's pulling them out a day earlier, it turns out. They're going to leave tomorrow, and they're going to report to him on Saturday, and he's going back to New York. So we could hear something preliminarily on Saturday or Sunday about what their findings were, but many say that many experts say that they would need about a week of laboratory testing to really know. So what we're going to find out from them on Sunday is unclear, and whether it'll be definitive or not, we don't know. But we should hear something on Sunday from them about what they have found.
Mm-hmm. All right, and now, so what do you know about this guy Bashar al-Assad? Is he Hitler? Is he so damn insane, or what?
No, he's not Hitler, and it's funny how, you know, Obama's not called him Hitler. If Bush were in power, I'm sure that would have come up again. Because the U.S., is whenever there's war coming, they relive fantasies of Second World War when we were the good guys, so we have to demonize whoever the enemy is, even if we were previously allied with them, like Saddam Hussein. And don't forget, Hillary Clinton said that Assad was a guy we could work with, and that he was a reformer, you recall, a few years ago, because he was making some economic reform liberalizations that were very palatable to the neoliberal crowd. So they liked Assad.
Well, and he had cooperated very closely with Bush on torture and extraordinary rendition, and that's important, too.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. He helped on during the Iraq invasion, didn't really get involved too much. So, yeah, he wasn't a good guy, but it was somebody that the U.S. could deal with. And he was, of course, very fashionable with his beautiful wife, and he was in London all the time, in Paris. So it was a kind of a jet setter and seen as somebody, you know, not as cruel as his father was when he had to put down a 1982 revolution that we can't tend to forget about. That was squelched a lot quicker against the Muslim Brotherhood uprising. So, no, Assad is not Hitler, but he's fighting for his life, and he, don't forget, runs and has run a very repressive police state. This is not a democracy. There's no question about that. His family's been in power for 40 years. I was in Damascus 2 weeks before the uprising, and I was walking around. Every 5 minutes, you saw a picture or a statue of him or his father. And I could only think that if I were in New York and I saw a picture of George Bush, George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush every 5 minutes, I wouldn't be pleased, or any American leader, family of either party, to stay. So I understand the frustration and the reason for the rebellion, and I think Assad has a lot of responsibility for this revolution because he had opportunity 6 years ago to reform and to open up and to loosen his grip on power, but of course he did not. It's a dictatorship. He's going to do everything he can to stay in power, protect him, his family, the mafia around him, and the Alawites, who he has, who are, of course, he belongs to, that are really the ruling group. And he will, I don't think he's going to use chemical weapons at this point. I always thought, and analysts I interviewed said that if he did use them, it would be only at the very end when he was completely cornered, and it would be that or death. And that at this point, that's why I say at this point, him using it when he's winning makes absolutely zero sense. So he's not Hitler, but he's a dictator. He could be tyrannical. He's been vicious. He has no compunction about killing civilians with conventional means. But I don't think he would doubt that he would stop it using chemicals if he had to. I just don't see where he had to in this instance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. He could be a psychopath without being crazy. You know what I mean? They want to talk about, you know, they want to talk about how evil he is and try to make the same thing that they did against Saddam Hussein, the same thing they do with the Iranians, or especially with the Iranians. They say they're so religious that it makes them too crazy to deal with, right? But for whatever reason, it's always, we can't negotiate with this guy because he's too immoral or he's too irrational or whatever. So the only thing he understands is force and all that kind of crap.
Yeah, well, look, they're trying to portray him as being suicidal, and I don't think he is, because it's clear that he's doing everything he can to survive. He's not suicidal. And to launch a chemical attack now with weapons inspectors in the country after Obama's red line speech on the anniversary of the first anniversary of that would be suicidal. So that doesn't make any sense at all. Now, we should look at what happens if these attacks take place, and even if the evidence were conclusive, and that he did it. You have to question what's the wisdom of these attacks. Is it purely some moral outrage, some responsibility to protect? Will it prevent more chemical attacks or more killings of civilians? No. Will it end the war? Will it bring about a peace conference to end this war? I tell you, if it did, if a couple of cruise missiles could do that, I would support it, but it's very unlikely that that's going to happen. It's more likely that it will encourage the rebels, that the fighting will increase, and that there will be retaliation at some point down the road against the United States, probably in the form of some kind of terrorist attack against U.S. interests in the region by Hezbollah, by Iranians, by the Syrians. So I don't think this is going to have any effect whatsoever, and it could have a very negative effect, even in the carrying out of the mission itself, the killing of civilians, the accidental release of chemical weapons by hitting depots. It just doesn't make any sense to go ahead with this attack unless it were to end the war, which clearly will not.
Now, the Libya precedent to me was that, and I could see it coming. I called it out on the radio show where when they just first started talking about a no-fly zone, that once you accept that, that means you're accepting responsibility for the future security of the Libyan people, in quotes. And so, therefore, regime change. They'll never be secure until Gaddafi is gone, is the logic, and therefore regime change, and watch them go, and there they went. As soon as they got the no-fly zone, it was a regime change mission the next day. And so it seems like, well, I guess the question is, do you think that's the same thing here where, I mean, because if they just, I guess they could just call it a few punitive strikes and then step back for a little while and see what happens or something like that. It seems like once you get that involved, you're taking the side of so-called the people versus their government, and so now you're the government. You broke it, you own it, and Colin Powell's Pottery Barn and all that crap now. What do you think?
I think Obama wants to avoid that. That's what it sounds like. Whether he'll be able to or not is another question. I think he doesn't want to get deeply into this. He wants to be a one-off punitive strike, which, again, its utility is very questionable. What will it actually bring? So I think he wants to avoid that, but it could happen. I mean, there are neocons now who are taking advantage or pressing. They've written a letter to him, and it's signed by all the, sorry to say, usual suspects, Elliot Abrams, Fawad Ajami, Max Boot, Douglas Feith, Lieberman, Clifford May, Daniel Pletka, Karl Rove, Randy Sherman, Crystal Kagan, Sin Dine Senor, all those friends that we haven't heard about from a while. They all wrote a letter the other day to Obama saying, look, this is the opportunity. It was dated August 27th. This is the opportunity to take this guy out. And Obama is clearly, well, not clearly, he had his press spokesman in contorted language saying this is not about regime change. So he wants to avoid that. But the pressure is on from John McCain and these collection of neocons for him to do what you just said, which is to own the country. And that would be something that only 9% of the American public would agree with. And
well, The Hill is reporting, or it's the Los Angeles Times, one official said the White House is seeking a strike on Syria just muscular enough not to get mocked.
Yeah, well. Yes. I mean, what is this motive? I mean, what kind of a motive is that to use massive force against the country?
Well, and anyone who would want to defend him on this point, I couldn't see it. I mean, the fact of the matter is, all he has to say is, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff says that this is biting off more than we can chew right now, and you want me to listen to my generals, right? You don't want me to be like LBJ bossing my generals around. They're telling me that this is a bad idea. So you Republicans, go take it up with the Pentagon. And then he's done. He can hide behind his generals to stay out of a war. That's the easiest excuse in the world. Come on.
Absolutely. Very, very good point. I think you're absolutely right. He could blame it on them, basically. These are the guys who know better than I do. I'd love to do it. It's an outrage what Assad did. If I thought I could bring an end to the war, we would do it. But my generals are telling me that this is just really not a good idea whatsoever, and it will not achieve anything, and it could be very counterproductive. And, you know, Obama, in his interview last night, said he hadn't decided yet. So it looked like we were marching to war a couple of days ago, and now maybe he's having second thoughts about this. And as you absolutely point out, the Joint Chiefs of Staff say that we shouldn't do this. So why do it? And why not say that they're the ones who convinced me? They know better than I do about military matters.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Hillary Clinton and Obama himself and Hillary and the CIA guys, Morrell, recently said this, et cetera. They're basically acknowledging the fact that there are no moderates fighting on the side of the rebellion. It's the jihadists. It's the, as you said, Al-Qaeda in Iraq and the al-Nusra Front, the suicide bombers, the al-Farouk brigades, who are the so-called moderates who actually want to have elections someday, supposedly. They're the ones who their guys eating the heart on video.
I know. FSA, yeah.
Yeah, so the point being, the guy says, well, Syria, the headline was, Syria the greatest danger. But you read the article, and it's, if the government falls, and it turns into a gigantic Lebanon Civil War-style 15-year multi-militia, you know, civil war unending, that would be the real threat to American interests in the region, Israeli interests in the region. It seems obvious enough. We've been talking about it for 2.5 years, Joe. You know,
it's been happening already.
Longer than that. All right, hey, thanks very much for your time. Appreciate it.
No problem. All the best.
Bye. All right, everybody, that is UN Joe. Joe Loria from the Wall Street Journal. We'll be right back after this.
Why does the U.S. support the tortured dictatorship in Egypt? Because that's what Israel wants. Why can't America make peace with Iran? Because that's not what Israel wants. And why do we veto every attempt to shut down illegal settlements on the West Bank? Because it's what Israel wants. Seeing a pattern here? Sick of it yet? It's time to put America first. Support the Council of the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and push back against the Israel lobby and their sock puppets in Washington, D.C. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, y'all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at libertystickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at libertystickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at the bumper sticker. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the BumperSticker.com. I created it but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. The BumperSticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use, and your political cause or campaign, too. The BumperSticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality.
Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. And tell them you heard it here.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for Braswell Business Communication Services at FusePowder.com. Braswell Communications can provide a credentialed media presence for your company at industry conferences and trade shows, as well as support services and consultation for publishing, editorial and technical writing, business-to-business and marketing communications, research, and information campaigns. Braswell also does website development and complete web content maintenance to include voiceover audio and copywriting. Strengthen your business. FusePowder.com.